Coming up on the Jalen Rose Renaissance Man podcast, we have stand-up comedian and comedy writer Josh Johnson. We'll get into which comedy greats influenced his humor. What is the criteria for someone to actually call themselves a New Yorker, and how he came up with the idea for his new special, Up Here, Killing Myself. Up next, Josh Johnson. Let's go.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you're bombing, you're not really thinking about improving. Like when you're in the middle of bombing, you're not like, man, how am I going to use this to turn everything around? You're more just like, oh, man, this is horrible. This is really bad. They hate me, you know?
Hi, I'm Jalen Rose, and welcome to the Renaissance Man podcast, proudly presented by the New York Post. A show where we cover trends in fashion, entertainment, current events, and everything in between. This week's theme is now and next. If you watch me on ESPN or follow me on social media, you know my feelings about the situation that it relates to Memphis Grizzlies guard, Ja Morant. You know why? I was him. And I understand the pressure that fame can have on someone so very young. And all of that has made me think about so many other talented young people, athletes, influencers, performers, and public figures who got now and next. They have found their fame and audience right now, yet their future is still full of possibilities. But I speak from experience when I say that becoming a leader in your industry as a young person can be very difficult. So it's extremely important that you surround yourself with quality people, those who can guide you, and those that can help you through all times. This will be essential. And like Rakim, I came through the door. I said it before. People come into your life for four reasons: to add, subtract, multiply, or divide. Choose wisely. And you need to pay attention to which category people fall under. My conversation this week is with someone who has his future ahead of him and the talent, charisma, and personality to take him there. Coming up, I talk to comedian Josh Johnson about the direction he sees late night TV going and which barbecue spot is his number one pick. Up next, Josh Johnson.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
My next guest got now and next. He's an Emmy-nominated writer, comedian, podcast host, NAACP award winner, who currently writes for The Daily Show and is a former writer and performer for The Tonight Show. His new comedy special is called Up Here Killing Myself, and it transforms an hour of therapy into an exploration of Black mental health and self-discovery. It's streaming right now on Peacock, so make sure y'all check it out. It is my honor to welcome the hilarious Josh Johnson to the Renaissance Man podcast. Welcome.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I appreciate the love and thank you for taking the time. I'm a huge fan of your work, so I'm excited to have you on the show. I know that you grew up in a small town in Louisiana. So tell me about your childhood, what it was like there, and at what point did you know that comedy was something that you knew that you wanted to pursue as a career?
I guess it was when I was little. I was doing a lot of just watching comedy and everything. I didn't really know it could be a job until I got older. Because even, you know, like when you're little in your head, you're like any adult with a job is like especially made for that job. So like when you're a little kid, you think of teachers as like, oh, these are people, that's just the person who knew all the math. So she teaches math, you know? And right. And like if you saw a pilot, you were like, oh, that's a special guy that knows how to fly. You forget that, you know, every person is just regular, and you even forget it as you get older. And so I didn't realize it could be a job until I moved to Chicago to start doing it. And even then I was working at a grocery store and doing shows at night. So it still didn't occur to me that it could be a career. And once things started taking off though, also, I think I took it seriously from the beginning. It really helped make it into a career, but it's always been something that I wanted to do. I always enjoyed making people laugh. I always enjoyed, like sharing my thoughts with people and everything.
So take us behind the scenes about your childhood in Louisiana and your transition and how you got to Chicago.
So I grew up in Alexandria, and I went to college in Shreveport, Louisiana. That's when I got the idea to go to Chicago. There were some in my class that were going to move to Chicago. And so I ended up moving there a little while after them and staying on some friends' couches for quite a while. And then, when I started, you know, I was just open micing. Like there wasn't much going on for me. I wasn't like, hello, Chicago, I'm here. You know, it was more just like me enjoying going up, learning both how to talk to people and learning, any sort of craft or any joke writing was coming about from so much watching people and getting their advice and talking to people who were sort of where I wanted to be and everything. And then, you know, ended up rising up through the sort of like ranks in Chicago and getting past at some of the clubs and stuff. And then I just sort of hit a ceiling there, I guess you could say, where, you know, if you're already doing the spots, like you're at most of the clubs, if not all the clubs, then that's an indication right there that that's all the money you're going to make, you know, is the spot pay that you can get. And start going on the road a little bit, but not necessarily headlining much and not as frequently as I would have liked. And so then I made the move to New York, and that's where things really took off.
So you earned your spot so very young in life. I believe you're 30. You already talked about living in Louisiana living in Chicago, living in New York. But people sometimes underestimate the sacrifices and the discipline that you've had as it relates to working at grocery stores, sleeping on your friends' couches. So talk about that endurance and what were those times and years like for you?
I mean, you know, when you don't, if you're not used to much, you don't actually know the difference. So it's like if you like, you know, like when someone's like broke, they're not like, "Oh, I'm out here grinding." They're just like, "No, this is the most comfortable couch I've been on. This is pretty good." You know, it's not until you look back that you're like, "Oh, I was in a bad situation. That was horrible." And so for me, it wasn't necessarily like an attitude of like, "Oh, I'm gonna grind it out, and I'm gonna." I definitely want the recognition of being good, but there wasn't this mindset of like, "Oh yeah, I'm just paying my dues," and you know, sometimes you gotta sleep on a few couches. It's like it was just that what I wanted to do was close enough in relation to the things that I had to do to be in proximity. So it's like, I'm trying to make this make sense. The best way I can describe it is that, yeah, I think if someone laid it all out for a person of like, okay, if you want to get this stuff, you'll have to, yeah, sleep on some couches, take some bus routes that don't make any sense at all, where you're just on a bus for a full day to get to a show, just to save the money it'll take to make money at the show. I think that, yeah, if you tallied it all up for someone, they might be hesitant. But for me, you know, I think I was also so optimistic at the time that I was like, well, yeah, I'm sleeping on a couch. Yeah, I'm getting up at like 5 a.m. to go to work. But like, I got to do a show last night. And that's crazy because there aren't shows where I'm from. You know, there's maybe you begging the guy, the DJ at karaoke, to let you do 5 minutes, which no one will understand, by the way, because when people go for karaoke, no one's going to see comedy. So then right. It's like it just, you'd be asking to bomb for 5 minutes. You'd be asking for everyone to have a worse time at this karaoke bar. And so my thing of just being able to do a show was so mind blowing. I was like, I'm here and I'm having fun and I'm meeting people. I'm meeting really funny people, incredible comics and everything. And I'm getting to do all of it for free. So yeah, maybe the cost of doing it is sleeping on some couches or, you know, like sleeping on the floor if I have to, or, you know, like paying this $19 bus ticket that's $19 because it's 19 hours, you know. Dang. Like there's things like that happen. But I think as long as, you know, it's in pursuit of something that you love, it's a small price to pay. It's like with, you know, a relationship. If somebody came to you and they were like, "You're going to meet the love of your life. They're going to be great. You're going to wake up every day thankful that you met them." But they will like argue with you outside of a Regal cinema at some point, and you're just going to have to take that one on the chin. And it's like, yeah, some people would be like, "Oh, I'm not putting up with that." And then some people would be like, "Well, love of my life seems like a small price to pay for a couple of arguments in the back of some Ubers."
Exactly. So who were some of the entertainers and or TV shows that influenced your humor?
You know, I watched a lot of Bill Burr growing up, and I think that I definitely, like, even though I only watched a few of his specials, Christopher Titus, I enjoyed, because his special just happened to be one of the first that I watched top to bottom over and over. And I was like blown away by it because he was being really vulnerable and he was going really dark, but then he always ended up making it funny. And yeah, I think that, you know, obviously I had to sneak to watch it because my mom didn't want me watching it, but like Richard Pryor, especially when I was younger, and a lot of Chris Rock as well.
And also you mentioned bombing, because turbulence is a part of life. And you just even acknowledge that when you're in a relationship, there's going to be arguments. as a comedian, there's going to be times when you bomb, because I feel like that's the hardest job possible. You're in a room full of people that you don't know, and you're charged with making them laugh. And so tell me about a time where you were on stage or something that you wrote and it bombed, but it also gave you the inspiration to learn from it and to be better at your craft.
I mean, is a bit, that's it's a bit loaded, because it's like when you're bombing, you're not really thinking about improving. When you're in the middle of bombing, you're not like, man, how am I gonna use this to turn everything around? You're more just like, oh man, this is horrible. This is really bad. They hate me, you know. So I remember way back in the day, I did this comedy festival, and I don't mind getting bumped. I'm not that stressed about getting bumped, you know, by other comedians or people who have to go somewhere or whatever. But I had seen two different lists, the list that the host had and the list that the stage manager had, that mm-hmm. said that I was going first. And so I was like ready. And I thought the host was about to bring me up. And then out of nowhere, they say this other name. And then that person went up and they bombed horribly. They bombed so bad that half the audience left, and they ran the light by like 20 minutes, right? And it was like particularly horrible. And then I go up, and doing what I think any comic would do, I like roasted them a little bit for being so bad. Like, I've never seen half the people walk out before, ever.
That's crazy.
I haven't seen that since, right?
Wow.
They were so bad. And so then I was just like, and I wasn't even that mean. I just lightly was like, okay, wow, you know, that's kind of crazy. I've never seen half the room walk before. And I was just like, I think I said two things about him. Like not even going after this guy, but it turns out everyone that stayed were his friends. And so then I bombed, but it's like, I didn't even deserve to. They just liked him as a person, and then everyone else hated his comedy, so they left. And then they hated me for mentioning how much everyone hated his comedy. So, you know, it didn't really give me any courage. There was no silver lining. That was just a horrible night. But you move on.
Absolutely. And you move on you did, because your career ended up taking you to New York, where you live now. So I have to ask, of course, you're going to represent Louisiana to the fullest. That's where you were born. But working, playing, and spending a lot of time in New York, I have to ask you, do you consider yourself a New Yorker? And what do you think it takes to actually call yourself one?
I think it just depends on how many horrific things you've seen. Like, if you've seen a bunch of bad stuff, you're like, yeah, you're one of us. You know, like obviously there's time that needs to be taken into account. You know, some people want to be here like 2 months and talk about how they're a New Yorker and nobody really believes that. But I think if you've seen, I'm trying to think of like a real criteria, because, okay. I feel like if you've seen at least one attack, and you've seen at least one truly horrific thing that's like personal to you, that's all you really need. I think that there are some people who visit and come away with the experience of being a New Yorker more than people who have lived here for a while. I had a friend visit, and this is how you know somebody's rich. I had a friend visit New York, and they told me they couldn't believe how clean New York was. And I was like, oh, you must have not gone anywhere where there were regular people. You must have only been flying from place to place, because there's, if you even walked the pavement, you wouldn't say that's it was so insane. But they're also very rich, and so I can see how they only saw the best of what New York has to offer. But clean, I was like, wow.
Correct. Because you could be at the finest establishments and be walking down the street and the trash be taller than you.
Yeah. So that for me was the first time I was like, oh geez, okay. Yeah, we're living different lives.